Here's a weird, fun little question.
Uh-oh.
We're only going to talk about this one thing on this show, aren't we?
I know. I think, yeah, we were going to talk about it.
Why do I feel like you're about to describe Minority Report?
Yeah.
I basically am.
What if a computer you didn't understand how it worked decided you were guilty of thought crime? Would it be okay to lock you up because of that? How about no? Friends and enemies, welcome to Bad Voltage, episode 70 of season 3, during which the Three Musketeers are back together again. Hooray.
We are. Yes.
So, welcome Jeremy and Jono. My name's Stuart Langridge. Let's talk about things.
Yeah, which thing do you want to start with?
A lot of stuff is happening at the moment, most of which we're going to avoid because we're here about tech and not about everything else. But I'm going to start with a UK specific thing, but it's UK specific idiocy. So this is me apologizing on behalf of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland because
we can't have all the glory.
Well, you know, it's like, wow, a lot of people seem to be fucking up at the moment. Why don't we just get on board that bandwagon? So my government, in a moment when it was not listening to my point of view, has decided, the Home Office in particular, who are the internal management for the country, they do interior security and stuff like that. They have demanded that Apple give them access to end-to-end encrypted data. And Apple, not surprisingly, said, go fuck yourselves. We're not doing that. And took away.
Is this data on iPhones or what?
Yeah. So this is a thing called ADP, Advanced Data Protection. It stands for. So this
not the
is
payroll company, Jono.
I was going to say fuck.
Nothing to do with it. I could see the wheels turning.
not that company. No. So this is basically you can optionally turn on for certain kinds of data. On iOS and I believe macOS as well, but I'm not 100% sure about that, end-to-end encryption. And what this does is it's an operating system provided end-to-end encrypted service, which apps can take advantage of. So iMessages, which are sent by iMessage rather than by SMS, for example, take advantage of this. And a bunch of other stuff does as well. And the Home Office decided to refight the crypto wars of the late 90s. Hands up if you're on this podcast to remember the clipper chip the first time around. So yeah. we lived through all this. Unfortunately, it got beaten back. But yes, the Home Office have demanded that they are allowed to see their encrypted data. Apple said, blow us. We're not going to do that. And have just turned off ADP for the whole of the UK now. So, you know, thanks.
Did the Home Office say why they want this?
No.
Just Securitar?
The Home Office have not even confirmed that they asked for it.
And I believe they asked Apple also to not confirm that it was asked for.
Yeah,
correct?
And Apple said, we refer the honourable gentleman to the answer gave some moments ago in which we said, blow us, we'll say what we like about this.
I would like if they actually said that. That would be amazing.
To my understanding, though, what they actually asked was for a backdoor to be put in, not for UK users, for users.
Yes, yeah.
So that the UK government could access any user's data on demand.
Yes. So
it impacts all iPhone users.
Correct.
Now, this is all, to some extent, unconfirmed rumor, because the Home Office said we do not comment on operational matters, including, for example, confirming or denying the existence of any such notices. The thing which is frustrating about this, apart from the fact that, you know, what they want to do is undo maths. We had all this fight in 1999 about this. You can't build an encryption system which has backdoors for the government and make it safe. It's just not possible. But leaving all that aside, my government was doing quite well from a technology point of view. Recently, you know, up until relatively recently, taking some fair, well, this is partially from my point of view.
Could you outline your opinion on why?
I'm going to get the waggy finger of disapproval from Mr. and Mrs. Big corporations are great over here. But
hey, only one of us works for a big corporation in this team, by the way.
All of your clients, Baconio?
I don't work for them.
Okay.
I work with them.
They work for me.
They work for me. I'm the daddy here.
But yeah, so from my point of view, at least, so the work that we've been doing with the CMA, for example, about how to put decent regulations around use of technology, around ensuring that Apple have to allow other browsers on iOS, stuff like that. They've been very receptive to that. That's been working very well. We've had decent, sensible discussions about it. And the work they've been doing there and the papers they've been publishing are not only good from my point of view, but are world-leading in a literal sense, in that it's leading a lot of the other agencies around the world to do the same thing in the same way.
So they're blazing the trail a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. A whole bunch of other places have looked at how the CMA had it. So this is a good thing, right? And then in the last couple of months, we've seen two very, very, very stupid things. This is one of them. And the other one is the big consultancy on what use we should put to AI. And there's a big questionnaire that you should fill in. And that questionnaire is extremely slanted towards explaining why you think it's great. With no real boxes for I don't think it's great, which, as you have experienced in the US and elsewhere around the world, basically every artist and author and musician is against the idea of, and there's not really a lot of space for that. So the consultation, regardless of your personal feelings on what the outcome of that consultation should be, it's been presented in what seems like a quite slanted way, with the intention of getting the answer, yeah, this is a good idea. And a lot of people are very unhappy about that. And like I say, I'm not taking a position here on what the answer for that should be. But Jono, your question, why are they doing this?
Yeah.
Is the thing I don't understand. The encryption thing specifically, because this doesn't work. Everyone tried this 20 years ago. It doesn't work. And it didn't happen. But is there just a persistent belief that all the scientists just aren't trying hard enough when they say this can't be done, rather than it going, this is like making 2 and 2, 5?
Wait, what do you mean can't be done?
It is not possible to build a secure end-to-end encryption system which is not secure from some people and stop the keys from leaking, other people from getting into it, etc.
Right, but we learned that with the recent, what was it called, Salt Typhoon? Like, we did exactly this, which directly led to the Chinese government having direct access to 100%, from what I can tell, of cell phone users in the United States.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work out well. I think it's the very last part of your sentence that some people in government might not either understand fully or just don't care about, and they don't value the what you value about end-to-end encryption, they explicitly do not value.
Well, yeah, the obvious suspicion, assumption from everybody that other people's view are they should not be able to read my stuff, especially if I am a Frenchman living in Paris who wants to talk to someone else in Azerbaijan, and it's none of the damn UK government's business what I say, and they don't own me at all.
Right.
And the people making this decision are like, no, we should be able to read anything we like. You can trust us, definitely. But they can't say that out loud because it's obviously palpably laughable.
And I think that's a difficult, if you're a legislator, that's the difficult position, is there is no middle ground answer here, because it is precisely to your point, it's math. So the answer is either 0 or 1 with no in between. And that, right. that makes it sometimes difficult to legislate around, I think.
Mr. Langridge, I have a question for you, which is taking a step back from all of this, because I think this is one of those situations where there just doesn't seem to be a good outcome, right? Because on one hand, I think it's very reasonable for Apple to respond with the aforementioned go blow yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I am in this specific thing 100% on Apple's side.
So, and I get that because Apple's responsibility is to protect its users and its customers.
Yes.
And people should expect that. And Apple have not only, this is not like a casual policy for them, right? There's billboards in San Francisco about privacy in Apple. So that's good. The other thing is that I think, obviously, the government needs to keep its citizens safe, and I think that's reasonable as well. But do you see any, like, I'm going to assume here, Ak, that you are of the view that even if the, let me not assume anything. If the government wants to keep citizens safe, and part of it is, you know, terrorists and pedophiles and criminals and whatever else may be communicating with iPhones, I'm sure some of them have iPhones, like, what is the solution to this? Like, is it just, you just don't get access to that information? Like, what do you think the government should do to keep its citizens safe while also respecting, you know, and I agree with you, like, it's a big ask to go to Apple to ask them to provide this for them. Like, Stuart, how would you solve this? Like, what would you do if you were the government to solve this and keep your citizens safe?
What were they doing 30 years ago? You can still put taps on people's telephone calls. You can still go to a place and listen to them. You can still observe people's behavior. What you can't do is do it all en masse by observing literally everybody and then looking through it for bad stuff.
But I think they would argue that the world has materially changed in the last 30 years, and not acknowledging that is, you know,
Completely different environments.
Yeah.
So how would you do that? I mean,
I disagree with you entirely, because in 1980, sure, your little group of drug dealers or anti-government protesters or terrorists could not have a fully secure remote conversation, but equally, the government could not go, well, here are some people we've identified, let's go and just watch them, without doing all the investigative stuff anyway. And once you have pinpointed people, then you don't need to be able to break everyone's encryption at all times. It's still the same investigative process. The purpose of being able to reach in and read any message you want is that you will read all messages all the time and then troll them for bad stuff.
Oh, so it sounds like, if I understand you correctly, it sounds like what you're saying is in 1980, it was the same in the fact that, like, the authorities have a suspicion about an individual. Therefore, they go through the official channels to get access to their information, and then it happens. And what you're saying now is that's the same. I think what Jeremy and I are saying is the sheer volume of information, the sheer volume of communication, it's just a totally different world, I'd say. But Jeremy, I don't want to speak for you.
Even layering on top of that, if you're not a sophisticated tech person who understands the mathematics behind encryption, it would seem to them what they're asking for is the same as what they always had, right? They could target Stuart Langridge, say, I think he's doing something nefarious. I want to tap his phone. So now, because no one uses phones as phones, what they're saying is, I would like to tap into their digital footprint. Give me the ability to do the thing I have been doing for decades.
I do not dispute in the slightest that in, I don't know, 1992, if you're a legislator who'd never touched a computer, because that's what your secretary used to type letters, and you'd read about email in the Daily Telegraph and you'd never used it, then when you said, oh, people are using this encryption thing, we need to be able to read that in the same way that we are allowed to demand by court order a key to this locked building, or to listen to this person's phone calls. We are allowed to do that. It is reasonable to want to do that. And I think it is reasonable to also have not had that knowledge 30 years ago, right? But you do not need to have a load of detail about all the detail of encryption. If the world has changed, then legislators have to change along with it, right? You can't say, mm-hmm. oh, the terrorists are all adopting super technology now, but we don't have to as MPs. We're not obliged to understand this, right? If you think the world has changed and that changes your stance, then it also has to change the amount of research you're prepared to do on literally the very basics of this. And every computer scientist has been explaining this for 30 years that this is not possible. It is not possible that you have entirely avoided even hearing that that's the case. You might have ignored the fact that someone's told you it and not believed them, but that's your problem, not mine.
You sound surprised an entity called the House of Lords is not keeping up with modern technology. I am confused by this premise.
The House of Lords is all now 29-year-old appointed political people. It's not a load of 95-year-old guys in ermine who go hunting anymore, man.
Yeah, I mean, with completely end-to-end encryption, right? Let's say the authorities suspect that Stuart Langridge is selling fentanyl in Birmingham.
Yep.
And they don't know this. They need access to your phone to gather data on that. Are you saying that you would be okay that if they have a suspicion? They don't yet have any evidence around this. They just have a suspicion. You'll be okay with Apple providing access to all of those phone records and everything.
Under a court order.
A court order?
Yes, right. So you're not allowed to investigate people like that based on just suspicion. That's what court orders and warrants are for. But if you can make the case to a judge that this person needs surveillance, then you can get it. And at that point, you can do it. That's exactly the same as it is for phone taps or putting a tracker on someone's car or whatever, right? This already exists.
I agree. And that was the same in 1980.
Yeah.
But the sheer volume of information that we're dealing with today is totally different, right?
Don't see why that makes any difference.
It makes a huge difference, right? Because by definition, when the communication channels open up and many, many more people have the ability to communicate with each other, by definition...
No one talks less than they did in 1980. You couldn't listen to the conversations in 1980 because you had no way of standing next to everyone and hearing them. It's the same now.
I'm saying that they talk a lot more now. There's a lot more communication.
I don't believe that's the case at all.
It's undeniable. Yeah. The whole, are you crazy? The whole world is better connected than they were. There are people all over the world that are connected and engaging way more than they ever could. And even if you just look in developed nations like the UK and the US, the volume of communication we have is way more than it used to be. We used to talk on the phone. We used to talk via post.
Well, to one person at a time. Now you're in 7 different messaging apps all of the time.
Yeah. And by definition, with the increased level of communication, the likelihood for crime is going to be increased. I mean,
well, that doesn't follow. I will concede the point about more communication but what's changed is not the amount someone communicates, right? The fact that I happen to be saying it by typing in something doesn't mean I was silent up until I discovered the ability. But what the point is, there's a lot more one-to-many communication than there was before.
There's
a lot more one-to-one.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Why?
Because I will pick up my phone and message Jono a random question all day, every day, at any time, in a way that I would have never called him ever under any circumstances.
I'm sure you communicate with Jono more than you would do, but if that random question came up, you'd have just asked who you were sat next to at work about it. You're still communicating the same amount.
You
just
honestly believe that we don't communicate anymore?
I'm very
than 1980.
I'm very confused by your position on this.
It's borderline delusional.
Hang on. So until you discovered the ability to write things on instant messaging, did you still have all the same thoughts you have now, but just keep them in your head and never mention them to anybody?
No. You're comparing two entirely different eras.
Yeah. But that's the point. I think there's the same amount of communication. It's done in a different way. Absolutely. A lot more of it's done electronically than it was then.
So just the ease of that communication means I might have thought, Oh, I bet you Jono knows a thing and I have a question, but I wouldn't have taken the effort to pick up a phone and call him and hope that he answered and all the other things if it was just a quick question, where now I will rapid fire those questions to whomever because it's the friction is low and reduced friction means your behavior goes up.
Right. So the pitch there is 25 years ago, you might have still thought the same thing. You just gone, oh, well, I'm not going to get that answered and forgotten about it.
Yes.
It's multiple of these. There's that, but also the number, the level of one-on-one engagement. I'll give you a concrete example of this. I just looked it up. I have 9,500 people I'm connected to on LinkedIn, right? Even if I only ever talked to half of those people, right? Or a third of those people, that's way more people than I would have ever communicated with in 1980. And then we have one to many. And then we have, to Jeremy's point, the ease of like, I'm not going to, like back in 1980, you'd need to, like to pick up a phone call, like you'd have to have a reason to call somebody.
And you'd have to be by a phone. Like the means of communication were so limited. And the other thing that's changing here and has been changing since the dawn of time is the number of people who you will meet either virtually or in person that you will then communicate with. Like 10,000 years ago, you would have met 20 people in your life, maybe.
Right.
Right. And now you meet so many people because of conferences and travel and other things. And your opportunity to then stay in touch with them in a very easy way means you're not only communicating more with each individual, you're communicating with way more individuals in a way that makes the communication exponentially grow.
I see. I think I was meeting the same number of people in 2003 that I am today. And that predates social media.
I don't believe that for a second. Oh. You know people all over the world. And part of the reason why I think this is so great is that, you know, when you're connecting with people on Twitter or Blue Sky or LinkedIn or whatever, we get to build relationships and trust, and then we stay in touch with people, right? And like, there's no anyway, besides the point, like whether we agree or disagree.
This all doesn't matter, but yeah.
The reason why I was saying, like, just spot us for a second that there is more communication.
Sure. Okay. Fine.
By definition, that then increases. While it increases many great things in the world, it increases the likelihood of crime because, you know, if you were selling weed in 1980, then you'd be selling weed to whoever's in your village or town or whatever. But now you can sell weed on the internet and you can ship it to people. Now people can share, you know, illicit information about various things. There's all kinds of different ways in which...
If you're selling weed on the internet to people you don't know and then shipping it to them... There are a whole load of ways that you can understand and intercept that transaction and what's going on without having to read the messages, though.
By definition, even if we just look at it in raw terms, like let's say in 1980, this is stupid numbers, obviously. Let's say there were a million interactions in a particular setting, a million. And let's say 10% of those were crime related. Presuming that crime hasn't changed all that much, I know these are a lot of big assumptions, but now we have 100 million instances of communication. By definition, crime has a broader footprint. And my point here is that you need to be able to...
The amount of crime is a fixed percentage value of the amount of talking.
Again, I just said these are silly numbers. My point is to illustrate that with a greater level of communication and the same... overall percentage of crime.
You've said, here's an assumption. I've said, I don't agree with the assumption. You said, but given the assumption, there's more crime now,
The point that I'm trying to illustrate here is that there is no doubt that criminals are using all of these communication technologies,
yes.
Right? And that is the reason why the government wants access to these, to Apple's stuff, right? Is because they want to be able to identify, detect, intercept, and treat crime. And deal with crime, right? So what I'm saying is, given the fact that we can't compare 1980 and now because the level of communication shifted so much, presuming that for a moment, right? What is your solution to dealing with that? Because going to a judge and getting a court order just doesn't scale.
And keep in mind, for the courts that deal with this stuff like FISA, I just looked it up, their approval rate for requests was 99.7%. So asking them is the same as getting approval.
That's not the same everywhere, but I take your point on that one. As for your assumption that I do, so fine, I have spotted you the idea that there's more communication now. Sure, no worries. All right. I do not at all agree that just because there's more communication, there's a lot more criminal communication in the same proportion. And therefore, sure, you currently can't listen in on someone's end-to-end encrypted WhatsApp conversation with their dope dealer, but then you couldn't listen to the conversation when they were standing on a street corner having it 20 years ago either.
Let me ask you this question. Do you believe that criminals are using these communication yes. channels? Right.
Yes.
So, therefore, if the government, presuming that there is more criminals engaging in activity than time permits to go to a court to get a court or to go to a judge to get a court order. Do you believe that?
No, that hasn't changed. Unless you think there are substantially more criminals now than there were 30 years ago, which I do not believe.
You believe that going to a judge to get a court order and whatever the time involvement is to do that is sufficiently enough, that is sufficiently scaled out to deal with the level of criminal activity in these communication channels. You believe that it serves the level of yes, criminal activity in communication channels?
I think that was adequate 30 years ago. And if it was adequate 30 years ago, it still is adequate.
Okay. I respectfully disagree.
Okay, no, fair enough.
I don't believe that to be the case. But honestly, don't fucking know. I have no idea whether that's the case or not.
It's interesting that this leads into that larger discussion, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
But one question though, if it didn't adequately meet that need, let's say some expert was to magically appear on Bad Voltage right now and say, no, we're drowning. Like we don't have a mechanism right now to be able to, you know, deal with this crime because the current system isn't working. Would you be open to the idea of not necessarily, I think we all agree, like just going to Apple and saying, we want to look at all of your shit. I think we all agree that that's not the right approach, but do you think that it'd be reasonable to go
That is a meaningless hypothetical. If an expert appeared on Bad Voltage right now and said, the problem we've got in America is actually wives, would you then be prepared to murder Erica? Like, you're like, what the hell?
But that's not a meaningless hypothetical.
Yeah, but the point is that's, you just go, well, that's not the case. No expert's going to show up and say that.
Let me reframe it. What I'm saying is, if we, again, spot this for a second, don't know if this is the case or not, but let's say expert appears in Bad Voltage and they say, yes, the current system that we have for getting court orders is not, it doesn't scale up to deal with the amount of crime that we have to deal with, right? Presuming that for just a moment, what I'm trying to get at is, do you think it would be reasonable for some kind of automated system to be in place? Because I think I'm guessing the reason why you support the court order thing is that it requires a human being to be able to go to a judge and then a separate objective third party.
There are two reasons I support it. The first one is that there's some kind of oversight. Judicial right. in this case, because that's yeah. the best we've come right. up with, but some kind of oversight. And the second one is yeah. that it's targeted. You can't do it to everyone at once. You have to do it to right. someone who you think is reasonably, has a reasonable chance of actually being guilty. Because otherwise, what you do is you trawl literally everybody and then mine it for suspicion. And that's what I want to stop.
Here's a weird, fun little question.
Uh-oh.
We're only going to talk about this one thing on this show, aren't we?
I know. I think we can talk about it. But assuming that scaling is an issue, right? If there was a system in place to detect the suspicion of criminal activity, right? So let's say AI or whatever. this is a really stupid question. And then, well, let me reframe it. Do you believe a technology system, like an AI system, I know what you're going to say. I don't even know why I'm asking
why
you
this. Why do I feel like you're about to describe Minority Report?
Yeah.
I basically am. What I'm trying to get at is...
What if a computer you didn't and you didn't understand how it works decided you were guilty of thought crime? Would it be okay to lock you up because of that? How about no? Right?
let me frame it this way.
I have 1984, dude. Slow down.
Let's assume for a second and just spot me this, that I'm president. No. I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think there's a way, Ack, in which that system, which is, I think we'd all agree that like having that oversight is really important, is it being targeted is really important. Totally agree with all of that. But if we've got an issue that there's, let's say that there isn't scaling out, do you think there's a way in which technology can deliver those principles of objectivity and being targeted? Is there a more modern way to do that? I guess is my question.
And the answer to your question is, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know enough about the business of what being a copper is in the modern age. I don't know enough about the business of what we want coppers to be, rather than, you know, beating people up on the subway. Yeah. What we think law enforcement ought to be doing, I don't know enough about how you actually do it today, as opposed to when Dixon of Dock Green was doing it in the 1950s, and the job was to walk around the village and go, all's well, right? I am sure that if you talk to an actual copper and said, what is your job really like? Almost none of it is sort of the, you know, the children's television show version of what policemen do. But I don't know what it actually is, and therefore I don't know enough about that job to even answer that question.
Yeah. You know what?
I'm sure they're thinking about it.
Yeah. And if we achieve nothing else with this show, the minor blip on the Dixon of Dock Green Wikipedia page is 100% worth it.
I'm trying to work out whether anybody who's listening to this and isn't on my Zoom screen right now even knows what Dixon of Dock Green is.
It's
a particularly specific reference.
I know. I'm trying to think, Jerry, of a very traditional 1950s show from the States that would be equivalent, but I don't know enough about US television back then.
Dragnet
was after. Dixon of Dock Green was before that. It had a very sort of, you know, little small village feel about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Dixon of Dock Green was in the 70s, wasn't it?
Get out of town. It was the 50s. I'm sure it was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. It wrapped up in the 70s. It ran from 1955 to 1976.
Dixon of Dock Green was on when I was alive.
Yeah.
Only by about 15 minutes, probably.
This show took a turn. This, dear
listeners,
is where...
You know what I said? We talk about tech?
I was going to say, this is where, dear listener, I'd like to tell you that we were going to talk about the UK encryption for just a brief intro while we got to the rest of the show, which was about AI. And we are now past the time we were supposed to stop recording and have not even said the letters AI. So... on brand. Well, a more on brand show, I don't know, there has been.
So, yes. Would you like me, since we have a couple of minutes left, probably a lot of time to start a new thing, would you like me to tell you two very annoying personal AI stories?
Oh, yes.
They came up recently, because then if we're going to talk about this stuff in the next show, this gives you some fodder for sort of the way I think.
Are you going to tell me that AI is the same as it was in 1980?
I'm going to tell you it's about as good at it. On balance, probably, but no, that's not what the stories are about. But sure, when it stops telling me to put glue on pizza, maybe I'll listen. But so two things have happened relatively recently. Do you remember me talking a while back about how I had a relatively simple little bit of JavaScript that sorts tables on a web page?
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you about this.
This is your sort table, right?
Yes, sort table. I wrote that originally in 2003. And about once a week, I get an email from someone going, hey, how do I tried to do this with it and I have a problem. And I normally just send them back an email going, this is what you want to do or whatever. Every now and again, one of them comes back and goes, could you do that for me? And then I get paid for it. Right. Nice. That's nice, right? 20 years of stuff. But there's also been a problem with people using it on their site, but they're linking to the copy on my site. Hot linking it, it's called. Which is really annoying, because what that means is every time they get a user, my site gets a hit.
A CDN now.
Yeah. Well, basically I'm an involuntary CDN. I don't want to be a CDN. And what I did was I let this go, right? I thought, whatever, sure, some people are going to do that, but it's not that big a deal, right? I have the bandwidth, the capacity to deal with it, and it's a relatively nice thing to do. And then a couple of years ago, I ran into a problem where half a dozen pretty high-profile sites were doing it, like a couple of large American university sports sites were doing it, which means that my server was getting hammered. You know, the ones where they have all the stats for all the teams at the uni, so loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of people look at it.
Oh, wow. So you were getting bashed.
My site
that?
Was getting hammered to bollocks because of this.
Oh, my God.
And I wrote a very long blog post about this, going, what can I do about it? Predictably, half of the internet were like, I know what you should do. You should make that. You should change the JavaScript so it puts a big picture of a dick on their web page or whatever. And I'm like, A, it's not the users of that
kind
site's
of on their camp.
Fault.
That sounds like a great idea.
No, it's not the fault of the users of that site. No. It's the fault of the developers. And that wouldn't be punishing the developers, it'd be punishing the users. Secondly, as much as I might be in the right, no one cares about that when the lawyers come to call. And I do not want to give my house to a lawyer to prove that I was in the right. So I went backwards and forwards on it. And then my host, Mythic Beasts, who are great, came to me and said, Jesus, this server's getting a lot of hits because of this. Can you do something about it? And so I ummed and ahed for a while, and I explained the problem to them, and they went, okay. And we did a lot of attempting to deny list stuff based on the referral and so on to block those sites out. I contacted the big high-profile sites and said, hey, could you pass this on to your development team? Maybe you could stop doing this. You've obviously got loads of money to build this thing. Just take a copy of it. I'm not going to charge you for it. It's just there. None of them even got back to me. Right? You can read the blog post about this for more about it. But so we went backwards and forwards. And then they came back to me. My host came back to me again and said, this is a problem. Can you do something about it? We're sorry, but this is a big thing. What we could do is we could move you to a dedicated server. So then I'm like, I've got to pay extra for that just because of this thing that I don't even want though. And they went, yeah, but it's imperiling the other users on this server. It's getting that many hits.
You are the noisy neighbor.
And so I went, fine, okay. I put the script in a zip file and now you got to download the zip file. So it's now more annoying for everyone who wants to use it because then I have to download a zip file, unpack the zip file. It's not that much more annoying. And it means it's not hot linkable anymore.
Yeah.
So that was annoying, but a bloke got in contact with me the other day and said, hey, that broke. And I went, yeah, check it out. And I've written, actually, there's a little thing on the sort table page, which says, okay, the reason I've done this is because all of you bastards can't be trusted. Right? Right? You had your chance and you comprehensively pissed in that waterhole. So now no one gets it. Tough. And the guy went, I read that, but the reason I just hot linked to it directly is because that's what AI told me to do. And I went, what? And so did a little bit of testing with the help of someone's help. And you go and ask ChatGPT, specifically ChatGPT. I haven't managed to make other AIs do it, but specifically ChatGPT, if you basically ask it, hey, I want an example of how to do client-side sorting of an HTML table, give me some example code, bang, puts out a thing where it hot links the thing on my website. So, super annoyed about this. And I'm sure there's a bunch of people like, oh no, they don't decide to do it. It just regurgitates what's out there in the world already. I'm like, tough shit, that's not an excuse. And can I even?
How do I even tell it that it's wrong?
How is that different than this? Someone that would have just posted the same thing to Stack Overflow, which would have become the most popular hit in Google, which would have led to the same
thing? Because in Stack Overflow, I could put a comment right below it going, hey, I own this script. Don't do this. Instead, these are the instructions for how to link it. Okay, so I'm happy to be able to write a comment on the bottom of all ChatGPT answers which mention this and then have people downvote it, if you like. How do I do that?
There's no community notes for ChatGPT.
No, there are not.
I tried it on Gemini and it did not do that thing. I'm going to try it now. I'm curious.
Exactly. So that's story number one.
That is interesting. Yeah. That is very interesting. Like, it opens up a whole set of questions. So
that's story number one. Okay. Story number two. Have we got time? Yeah, we've got another couple of minutes.
Of course. Let's do it. Let's go.
Ready. Number two. There is a relatively famous online D&D show streamed called Critical Role. They were at one point. Do you remember when Twitch subscriber and subscription money figures got leaked a couple of years ago? There was a big leak a couple of years ago where you got to find out how much the top 10,000 Twitch streamers earned, which is not public information.
That's right, I remember it now.
Critical Role were the highest earner on Twitch, right? They're a relatively big streamer.
And they do like D&D games,
They also put all the videos on YouTube, and they're all for free. And there's a big fan base, and those YouTube videos are professionally captioned, rather than automatically captioned by the AI thing. So I built a thing which downloads all the captions and dumps them into a search engine. So people can go and search the entire back catalogue, which is 300 shows, each of which are about 4 hours long. So there's quite a lot of it. And it's been a really useful fan tool, right?
So people can like search for something, find an episode,
and it shows you a completely marked up transcript of that episode, and it shows you the line of which someone said it and who said it, and it links to that individual bit in the YouTube video and stuff like that, right? It was never meant to be, you know, a mass market thing. It's a tool for that fan base.
Just a bit of fun for the fans.
Because I thought it was cool, right? And because I did that, because I have a thing which goes and downloads them from YouTube, and it tidies up all the transcripts and it marks them up nicely and it makes them HTML and so on and so forth. I thought, since I've got a thing which does that, other people might want to do this too. It'd be pretty mean to go, well, I've done that, you don't get to have it, because it's not my data, right? If this was my data, if we were doing it for Bad Voltage, maybe I wouldn't release my brilliant script, because then it's competitive advantage for Bad Voltage over every other podcast. Not that it is, and not that we would do that, but you know what I mean. But this is not my data. It is not reasonable for me to lock up access to it. So I also have a thing where you just download a zip file of all the scripts. And I update that zip file every time there's a new thing comes out, which is once a week. It automatically, as it rebuilds it and re-indexes it all for the search engine, it also rebuilds the zip file. So you can download a completely marked up set of scripts, right?
Yeah.
And then some bloke took them, trained an AI model on them. This, again, regardless of your opinion on whether you personally think this is a good idea or not, got a lot of pushback from people who don't think it's a good idea, to the point where there was a Polygon article about it in which I was specifically named. So that was good.
Really?
So I had to write a whole thing going, this is what I think. It's not for me to give you permission or not to give you permission on whether you can use this stuff and what you can use it for. I don't own it, but these people do. Go and ask them, which you didn't do. It's like, you know,
did the people who make the streamers, did they respond to any of this stuff?
They haven't responded publicly. Whether they responded privately or not, I don't know. But the point is, before I did this, I asked them and they said I could do it. So I actually asked for permission. I didn't just do it for lols, because I'm like, this is their stuff. Maybe they don't want this. Yeah, maybe they want to build it themselves and charge people a fiver for access to it. I don't know. So I asked permission and was granted it, which is nice. And if they popped up and said, okay, this is now too risky, you are now making it too easy for someone to take our copyrighted work and do things we don't approve of with it, you need to take this down, I'll be like, okay, and I'll take it down tomorrow, because it's their thing, right? So I wasn't directly affected by this, but it did mean I had to spend a whole weekend being very annoyed about it, and then writing up a thing, and then dealing with the fact that I got linked in some bloody Polygon article and blah, blah, blah. And it's just my entire experience of the thing, the uses people are putting AI to in the recent past, has been that it's been a pain in my ass on more than one occasion. So I'm not feeling particularly positive.
What you don't want to have to do is, like, you know, you go and create your cool little search engine, right? And you do that for the fans. And you did it the right way. Like, you reached out to the people and asked them nicely. And you did literally nothing wrong. And you don't want to have to like be like, well, why don't we put together a license that will prohibit people being able to pull it into a
right
and trying to model on it. You just want to fucking do something nice, right?
Yeah, you can't do nice things because people take advantage of it. And then if you say, well, I'm no longer doing this nice thing because people took advantage, some people say, well, you should have protected against that from the beginning, right? You should take that into account. You're like, okay, but what that actually means is nobody does nice things anymore, man. That's not sure. You go where people are more protected, but it's not a world which is actually better. And I don't want a world in which I'm more secured away from malfeasance. I want a world in which there's less malfeasance, you right know. But yeah, anyway, so those are my two there little recent personal experiences with the world that AI is creating. And I've got to say, not all that happy about it.
You're not a huge fan of AI, are you?
So. I am not. There are a lot of people who are using it to do things that they think are cool. And a lot of that is pretty cool, to be honest.
It's a Swiss Army knife.
But it's being...
Some people get cut with it. Some people don't get cut with it. What a profound thing to say,
it's being very
everyone
annoying, and it does... And they did steal a whole shed load of information to make it. But this is for a future right show. So
that is, yeah. We should actually do a big AI show at some point, just dig into it. And because I know today we were going to talk a little bit about OpenAI and Grok and all these different things. I think it'd be fun for us to actually have a proper dig deep into AI. Maybe we'll do that in the next one.
Yeah.
All right.
Sounds like a plan.
All righty. Well, we should say a huge thank you to Marius from NerdZoom Media for his excellent work in editing this show. He always does a phenomenal job, and he's been doing it for many years now. Speaking of doing nice things at no cost,
yeah,
he just does it to be nice. Can you? It would be the equivalent of him editing the show and then us promoting someone else.
If it makes you feel any better, Ack, I tried all of the models I have access to, and not a single one pointed to your script.
Oh well, that's encouraging.
It's a good sign.
I have seen that it does do it, so I'm not just going off the report of some guy in my inbox. But yes. So it's reassuring that they're not all doing it, but nonetheless.
On that bombshell, we will wrap it up. Lovely seeing you fellas, and people of the internet, go to our Slack, go and talk and engage and share what you think about all of the ways in which we're incorrect about things.
And I feel like I talked a lot in this episode, so next time I'm going to shut up.
No, I don't think you talked to
give you two a chance to get a word in edgeways.
No, you didn't talk too much. I think I talked as much as you did.
We're inviting Claude next time just to have you argue with them.
Let's do it. Bring it on.
Awesome.
Later.
Peace out.
Later, peeps.